Our opening words this morning are from the back of the hymnal and are by Kathleen McTeague. We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edges of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, of memory and hope, is hallowed by our presence together. We come to the center of our service and the center of our lives, a time for lighting candles of memory and hope, or sitting quietly wondering who you are and why you are here. Join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of my longing heart, help me become a force of history. Like a drop of water, let me merge and mingle in the currents of my particular time and situation and not hold back, but join what nurtures the earth and soaks the seeds of justice and peace. Let me be the flashpoint where the light begins to travel at great speed, igniting compassion, that others might see the power of goodness. Let me rush with the winds of change across the desolate plains of greed and selfish desire. Grant me the wisdom to know that the winds of eternal hope blow through my words and deeds. Let me join the sky with its watchful eye and be a witness to life affirmations wherever I see them. Give me the strength to say yes to even the smallest act of mercy. With these powers of earth, of light, of wind, of sky, I will change myself and become a gift of love and power to the story of humankind.
Good morning, everybody. My reading today is from two persons, actually, two readings. The first one is from the writings of Eleanor Roosevelt. Just a brief excerpt from some of her very thoughtful works. She says this: living and learning, but they are really the same thing, aren't they? There is no experience from which you cannot learn something, and the purpose of life, after all, is to live it, to taste experience to the utmost, to reach out eagerly and without fear for newer and richer experience. You can do that only if you have curiosity, an unquenchable spirit of adventure. The experience can have meaning only if you understand it. You can understand it only if you have arrived at some knowledge of yourself, a knowledge based on deliberately and usually painfully acquired self-discipline, which teaches you to cast out fear and frees you for the fullest experience of the adventure of life. I honor the human race. When it faces life head on, it can almost remake itself. And then this brief writing from the autobiography of Mohandas Gandhi called My Experiments with Truth. He says, as I was working on my book, a friend had his doubts, which he shared with me on my day of silence. Writing an autobiography is a practice peculiar to the West. I know of nobody in the East having written one except those who have come under Western influence. And what will you write? Suppose you reject tomorrow the things that you hold as principles today, or supposing you revise in the future your plans of today, Is it not likely that those who shape their conduct on the authority of your word, spoken or written, would be misled? This argument had some effect on me, but it is not my purpose to attempt a real autobiography. I simply want to tell the story of my numerous experiments with truth. I should like to narrate my experiments in the spiritual field, which are known only to myself, and from which I have derived such power as I possess for working in the political field. If the experiments are really spiritual, then there can be no room for self-praise. They can only add to my humility. The more I reflect and look back on the past, the more vividly do I feel my limitations. As this congregation continues through its difficult transition, and during this time of economic uncertainty and fear, our country in wars, and so many of us not knowing what happens next. One of the questions for us is, to whom can we turn in leadership, whose goals and actions are those of integrity? Whom can we hold in any sort of trust? Well, for me, I find comfort in exploring the lives of persons who are role models, who faced a time of turmoil, change, uncertainty, and war, as we do now. Their courage provides me with an example of how people can meet challenges head on, as Eleanor Roosevelt says, and how an active spiritual life can prepare us for necessary political action, as Mohandas Gandhi says. I referred to the First Lady and the Great Soul because I wish to pay special homage to these two persons during this, a time near the anniversary of their births. Eleanor Roosevelt was born on October 11, 1884, and died on November 7, 1962, at age 78. Mohandas Gandhi was also born in October, October 2, 1869, and died prematurely on January 30, 1948, in assassination, also at the age of 78. The First Lady and the Great Soul, Eleanor and Mohandas, had a great deal in common. Both of them suffered enormously in their personal as well as in their public lives, but both were determined to try to spare others their suffering. They sought to put their suffering to use so that it would not be a meaningless burden in their lives. Neither Eleanor nor Mohandas would have mouthed the platitude that first you must have peace in your heart, and then you can work for peace in the world. You can tell I don't believe this. I find it a kind of privatistic, egotistical statement that, in my opinion, completely misses the point. But the lives of Eleanor and Mohandas illustrate the point. We'll start at the beginning. Neither of these persons displayed a great deal of promise early in life. Both were burdened by an oppressive environment from the start, and both were made stronger by adversity. Eleanor was given to understand from her earliest years that she was homely and therefore deficient in the quality that every woman needed in order to achieve success in life, and that would be physical beauty. She grew up feeling left out, unpopular, and unloved by everyone except by her charming father, Elliot Roosevelt, who was a sportsman, a ne'er-do-well, and an alcoholic. As the brother of Theodore Roosevelt, Eliot never quite measured up to the standard of masculine achievement and bravado of those Roosevelts. Eleanor took upon herself from her earliest years the defense of her handsome father. His death when she was only 10 devastated her and made it feel as if her world had ended. Eleanor's mother was a great beauty and a socialite, and her shy, plain daughter never measured up to her standards either. Her nickname for Eleanor was Granny because of the little girl's serious demeanor. Eleanor's mother's death when Eleanor was 8 was not the devastating experience that her father's was, but each of these great losses through death contributed to her sense of being unattractive and unloved. Eleanor lived with her relatives until she was sent to boarding school in England, and those years from age 15 to 18 were the most secure and happy of her life. It was then that she realized that since she could never count on physical beauty to gain people's affection, she would rely on helpfulness. She wrote, "The feeling that I was useful was perhaps the greatest joy I experienced." And in an essay from those teen years, quote, "It often happens that those whose existence seems saddest and dullest are, in fact, the happiest. For instance, you sometimes meet a woman who sacrifices her own life for the sake of other people's happiness and is happy nonetheless because she finds in her devotion the best remedy against sadness and boredom." End quote. She was not well educated by our standards. Those 3 years in England, while academically rigorous, resulted in no degree, but she was highly gifted, highly intelligent in languages, and read and wrote and listened continually in order to improve her mind. Mohandas Gandhi grew up in circumstances far removed from the luxury of Eleanor's. Born half a world away, Mohandas adopted from his earliest years a sense of himself and his people as inferior to the British around him. Certainly, as a person of color, he was encouraged by his society to see himself as an underling to those who were in power. He was an indifferent student and had trouble with English and Sanskrit. He was physically underdeveloped and not very good at sports. He preferred going on solitary walks and playing simple Indian street games. It is clear to see that Mohandas was a prime candidate for a life of delinquency and petty crime. He and his friends secretly tried to smoke cigarettes with money they had stolen, and they also tried smoking the stems and leaves of a local weed, but he says they couldn't keep them lit. He was desperately shy, although during his time in England he was elected to the executive committee of the Vegetarian Society. He always felt tongue-tied at the meetings. He says in his autobiography, quote, "I sat quite silent. Not that I never felt tempted to speak, but I was at a loss to know how to express myself. All the rest of the members appeared to me to be better informed than I. Then it often happened that just when I had mustered up courage to speak, a fresh subject would be started. This went on for a long time." End quote. Mohandas was raised in an Orthodox Hindu home in which meat eating was forbidden, As a matter of fact, he was of the especially strict subsect of Hinduism, the Jain religion, and in his home, the eating of meat was tantamount to the eating of human flesh. Still, once as a youth, Mohandas gave in to pressure from some non-Hindu friends and consented to eat some meat of goat. Later he wrote, "A horrible nightmare haunted me. Every time I dropped off to sleep, it would seem as though a live goat were bleating inside me and I would jump up full of remorse." At age 12, he was married to Kasturbai, who was also 12. Mohandas was a jealous and imperious husband, forbidding his wife to go anywhere, not even to the temple, without his consent. And the more he ordered her about, the more she resisted, and thus relations were strained and not at all peaceful between them. He was lacking in direction, aimless, self-conscious, and naive. Hardly believable that he would become the leader of the Indian Home Rule movement. How could there have been such a change? From the awkward, insecure, self-conscious Eleanor to the First Lady of the World, as she was called. How could she have become the articulate woman who was instrumental in getting the Universal Declaration of Human Rights drafted and then approved by the United Nations? And how could the self-centered, impetuous, lazy young Mohandas have become the Mahatma, the great soul, who organized thousands, millions of Indians and others, and who forced the rethinking of persons all over the world about power and violence? How could they have changed so much? The paradox of victory rising from failure is symbolic of the lives of these two persons. For example, Eleanor was orphaned at a very early age. She might have remained aloof and removed from humankind for the rest of her life, given such a damaging, failure-ridden beginning. And yet she was seen by generations of persons, both older and younger than she, as a strong parent figure. She shepherded a youth movement through some hard times, using her maternal sense and her instincts as best she could. Certainly, we know keeping her family together was a tremendous impulse for her. It was her main accomplishment. Mohandas, for his part, lived separately from his family of origin from a very young age because of his child marriage. His father's death when Mohandas was 16 affected him strongly, and he never forgave himself for not being at his father's bedside during his last moments. And yet Gandhi was a father figure too, and a leader to all sorts of people. At his ashram, almost everyone took on family-type roles, with Gandhi at the head of the family. Almost everyone who knew him called him Bapu, which means father, or I think probably more colloquially, daddy. Ironic, as we know, that as a father to his real family, he left much to be desired. Certainly anyone who's seen the movie Gandhi knows the real neglect that his family suffered. Nevertheless, he influenced millions to see themselves as citizens of the world community, the world family. Another way in which each built upon what could have been an additional barrier is in their religious growth. Eleanor and Mohandas were raised in Orthodox traditions, Eleanor as a Christian and Mohandas as a Hindu. It is a characteristic of Orthodoxy that it sees those who disagree with it, those who have another path, as beyond the pale, as unworthy, and unless they embrace the real truth of orthodoxy or right beliefs. Both of them grew far beyond their traditional upbringing. Eleanor, directly confronting the orthodox view that the world was merely a mission field to be converted to Christianity, understood the world as an interrelated community. She knew that the global village needed better communication among its members and needed vast improvements in ways to help one another. This was, in part, what motivated her to work so hard for the establishment of the United Nations and other humanitarian organizations. Her worldview progressed into areas not approached by her traditional religious view. Alas, we cannot claim her as a Unitarian Universalist. Her son said that although she wasn't a Unitarian, she certainly had a Universalist spirit. Mohandas, too, understood the need for world community. Although he remained true to many of the tenets of Hinduism, he strove to abolish its references to untouchability. He sought to make all persons equal, and on his ashram, all castes and all religions were given equal status. He would not tolerate artificial barriers between people, even though his orthodox religion insisted upon those barriers. Mohandas and Eleanor had many faults, as recent films and biographical material point out, but their qualities of resourcefulness, of resilience, of making the best of a bad situation are ones that we would do well to emulate. Both of them suffered unfortunate childhoods under oppression, and yet both not only rose above their own oppression, but also dedicated their lives to removing oppression from the lives of others. Their suffering, which could have been so meaningless and so destructive, instead gave them the energy to guide others away from such meaninglessness. Both were raised in regimented, orthodox worldviews, but both discarded the chaff of that orthodoxy and retained the wheat. Neither was what we would call a peaceful person inwardly, and yet both furthered the cause of world peace and of universal justice, perhaps more than anyone else in our lifetimes. For now, a time of remembering, and I hope that we can do a great deal of remembering in parts of this month of October and parts of November. I hold up to you the lives of Eleanor and Mohandas, the First Lady and the Great Soul, as examples of persons who exhibited what I would call courage under fire, a worldview that included all cultures, and a commitment to work for a better world of peace for all people. So in ending, I would ask you this question rhetorically. Who says that peaceful international relations depend upon our having individual peaceful souls? Not I, and I hope not you. So may it be.
Our parting words from Wayne Arneson. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone.